Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Babu Williams.
Sup?
As much as that sounds like an insult, it is not an insult, because that was probably one of the best characters in the movie.
Okay.
We are not alone, as we have a great show in store. This is our Christmas episode, and what better way to have a gift brought to your ears than to bring back the man who knew everything about Star Wars, Mr. Travis Cook.
Hello, galactic friends.
Hello.
Galactic. I like that.
I like being galactic.
We got a great show in store for you, as we're going to be talking about the recent and last film of this Skywalker saga, and that is Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. So stick around as we talk about that, but before we do, Spencer, take it away.
Running through the jungle with a laser sword in hand, which is always safe.
Isn't it?
The Filmlosophers podcast is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Each Wednesday morning, check your Sith Wayfinder to see where you're headed, and then head on over and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Pocket Cast, and...
Panda!
There you go.
Go ahead. Sorry.
He's back. That's right. Travis is back with us. Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 to find out more about our other guests we've had on the show. Finally, tap into the Force and let the voices just roar in your head. Then that's head right. On over to our website for some good fun. I don't like the implications of that statement at all. Listen to our entire episode list over on filmlosophers.com.
That's why you got to read these things before you start
talking
about
them. I read
them.
It didn't click.
We got over 190 episodes all on our website, filmlosophers.com. We are now on episode 199. We are one away from the big 200. And to be quite honest, we're still trying to figure out the inner workings of how that episode is going to go. But we promise it's going to be a big episode. It's going to be fun. It's going to be awesome. But we're not talking about 200. We're talking about episode 199, which is the conversation around Star Wars.
What was your pause then?
That's the you know, you pause for dramatic effect.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh.
Well, the Travis, way you looked at me,
Travis,
it didn't
he doesn't know
work.
Dramatic flair.
I know dramatic flair.
We need J.J. Abrams in here, right?
Put a lens flare in this man's glasses. That's right. We're going to be talking about Star Wars: Rise of Skywalker. This is our Christmas episode, and we figure, you know what? There's been a lot of conversation about this film for the last couple of weeks. In terms of the film itself, there's been screenings in New York and L.A., and so everybody's been talking about it, and so we decided to check out the film. We had planned already. Travis was like first in line. He was camped out on Monday, and we're in Northern California. Nobody camps out, but he's the only one in line. So, you know, but
it was kind of boring.
I bet. We decided we were going to bring to you a awesome review of Star Wars: Rise of Skywalker, and what other day to do this on than Christmas? I mean, really. Really, Spencer? Is there anything else?
During Christmas, no.
I mean, Mark Hamill's already looking like Santa Claus. So, I mean, this has all the markings of a Christmas review. And here's the other gift that we're giving. This is going to be a spoiler review because to be quite frank, there's no way to talk about this movie without delving into spoilers. Am I right?
No, like, I was thinking about it last night. I was like, it's impossible.
It'd be a very short episode, guys.
All right, 12-minute episode. Here we go.
We saw it. We have opinions. End of episode.
That's it. So, before we dive any more into the film, obviously, we want to warn you there are spoilers ahead. So, if you haven't seen the film, you don't want anything spoiled, check out the film. Come back to us. We'll be here. We're not going anywhere. Spencer's actually glued to the seat. He doesn't know, but there's actually, stick, you know, crazy glue underneath it.
Yeah. This is a different seat than usual.
Oh, is it mine then?
Never mind.
So before we get into it, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Investigating a mysterious message, both sides are drawn toward the distant planet of Exegol. In search of answers, the First Order and the Resistance are both revealed their deepest desire. Their deepest and darkest fears. Palpatine still lives.
Dum, dum, dum.
Somehow. With time running out and an armada geared to strike against the galaxy, Rey must find herself in the midst of this journey and make the choice to become who she was always meant to be.
There you go. Directed by The Force Awakens' J.J. Abrams, the film stars Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, Adam Driver, Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Anthony Daniels, Naomi Aki, Domhnall Gleeson, Richard E. Grant, Lupita Nyong'o, Kerry Russell, Juna Suetamo, Kelly Marie Tran, Ian McDiarmid, and Billy Dee Williams.
Billy Dee.
Oh, Billy Dee Williams. J.J. Abrams actually is the second director to direct more than one Star Wars film following series creator George Lucas. So, as I mentioned, J.J. Abrams actually directed The Force Awakens and now this one. So, I mean, he's up there with George. You know.
Well, George has four, but that's fine.
Lucasfilms made it clear that they would not attempt to digitally recreate her Carrie Fisher's likeness or her performance like they did with her approval, obviously, in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story back in 2016. However, in July 2018, J.J. confirmed that Fisher will appear in this movie via unused footage from Episode 7, which was The Force Awakens, and Episode 8, which was
The Last Jedi.
There you go, Spence. With the writers and editors coming up with a clever way to repurpose those scenes. There's still actually one scene in the film in which Fisher was digitally, quote, de-aged, which was a very brief flashback sequence. So that's an interesting just kind of situation to have that happen. Like, I know obviously deaths can't be foreseen, but it's interesting that Lucasfilm made, like, the announcement to everybody. They're like, we're not going to digitally recreate her in the film. We're not going to do this. More than likely, too, because of the backlash that Rogue One got, you know, after they tried to recreate, what's his name? Pershing.
Grand Moff Tarkin?
Grand Moff Tarkin's actor. When they digitally recreated him, as well as Carrie Fisher's recreation in Rogue One. Like, there was a lot of people that were not for that. They just didn't look real. Like, they looked scary. And so I can understand them, like, kind of preemptively saying, you know, no, we're not going to do that. So I'm kind of wondering, like, what were some of the real, like, big pushes for, like, well, let's just go ahead and put her in there. I know we said no, but go ahead. Like, I don't know. Like, for me, it just seems like a really awkward place to be in. Like, how do you create a film where technically in this fictional galaxy, this character is somewhat still alive, but in reality, she's no longer here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you create that? You know? So, I don't know. I was just thinking about it. What do you think, Travis?
Yeah, I mean, JJ was put in a tough spot, and I think they must have just used every piece of footage and every camera trick and every piece of voiceover they could do. They didn't say they didn't, like, make up her voiceover. They could have hired someone to maybe kind of say some lines that sound like her.
Yeah.
Because they had a tough challenge there to keep the story going and honor her legacy at the same time.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I think they did an okay job in this area of the film. Mm-hmm. I can give them a pass in this area. It was a tough thing to pull off, and I think they did it with, you know, what they had to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, obviously, there are certain scenes where they had to use, like, a stand-in, you know, so that
they shot can over the shoulder type thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's I guess it does the job for this particular film. We'll talk about, like, the digital editing and all that stuff in a little bit. But one last piece of information: when George Lucas originally laid out plans for 12 episodes, he then reduced that number to 9 at first. He said that C-3PO and R2-D2 would be the only two characters to appear in all 9. This proves to be true, as Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi, the only other characters to appear in every film of the original and prequel trilogies did not appear in the sequel trilogy. And of all those people, Anthony Daniels is actually the definitive only actor to appear in all 9 films. So, kudos to Anthony Daniels, you know, still putting in the work ever since, you know, 1977.
Yeah, he's been in 9 of the 10 films if you count Rogue One.
Yeah. True. That's actually true. Because he was in Solo.
Yeah, not Solo. He was in Rogue One just for like a brief second, but not right. in Solo.
He wasn't in Solo. That's right. That's right. So, like we said, this is going to be a spoiler review. So, you are warned now, from this moment forward, this conversation is going to be nothing but spoilers. So, fair warning. Everyone agree? Fair warning?
Yeah. I think we've said spoilers enough.
And
spoilers?
We've already like given like a billion spoilers in that first 10 minutes there.
Yeah. Oh, the episode title says spoiler on it.
Well, I was hoping not to get too spoilery with the spoilers in this first part. But so, yeah, like we said, we're going to jump into this. But here's the thing. As we've stated in the episode where we did the Crash Course, Lesson 197, where we had Travis originally on, one of the things that we really kind of emphasized was the whole idea of the impact Star Wars has had just in the whole sci-fi scheme of things. You know, we've had Star Wars for over 30 years. I got this one right this time.
42. Yeah. Or 43 or something.
43?
Yeah, well, it came out in 77, so...
And
yeah.
Okay, so like 30?
No.
40?
42.
Yeah. 42?
42 or 43, yep.
Well, there you go. 43 or 42 years. So for almost half a century.
There you go.
Yeah.
We've had this franchise just impacting sci-fi in some of the best ways possible by essentially giving us the template, if you will, of creating like long-term, you know, plot threads to create future franchise, future episodes, future sequels. And it's interesting to see how even before this movie came out, there were so many people that were divided in the nature of what this film was already divulging itself to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know about you guys, but I spent a good amount of time trying to avoid certain conversations with people that I know, because as much as I would love to just be spoiled like crazy, there were certain parts of this film that I was like, okay, I don't want to know everything about what you saw, because for me, it's not so much as how, like what the people say, but it's in their opinion that follows with it. Mm-hmm. Like somebody can be completely biased in how they convey their opinion about something, or their view of something, like, oh, I saw this and this guy was walking down the street and this driver was not even paying attention and he totally ran his foot over. It's just ridiculous, crazy drivers. And that's one perspective. But then the driver may be like, I was, you know, trying to stay in the lane. I was whatever. This guy was just dancing in the street, got in front of me, jumped out of the way last minute, and got his foot ran over. And now you have two perspectives of the same situation. And that's kind of where I wanted to avoid. Like, kind of talking about expectations, my biggest thing that I was trying to do was, first off, not hear anybody else's prior opinion of pieces of the film and just hope that the film translates well enough what it was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much as what it was doing, because I know we had a pretty large conversation before we went on air, and I think it's clear to say that there was a little bit of an issue with that clear direction overall with the 3 films.
Right, or lack thereof.
However, I wanted to make sure I was going to come into this film with at least a clear understanding of what the intention was, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think I was in a similar vein. I was like, I just want to give this film a fair chance and not try to, you know, put too many expectations on J.J. Abrams to deliver this, deliver that, you know, check all these checkmark boxes, that type of filmmaking where he just has to like check this box, check this box, check this box. So I was just trying to keep my expectations a little in check in that area, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I had no idea where this was going is my overall problem. It's been my problem for weeks.
Yeah.
And I've been telling everyone I know that's what my problem is. Like, I was going to go in. I wasn't going to be like, this is going to suck.
Right.
Like, I was going in like, okay, show me something cool.
Show me what you got.
Yeah. Because, like, honestly, I had no idea what they had planned.
Like we talked about in the last episode. Yeah. This sequel trilogy has been kind of been all over the place for you, and so you just don't know where you don't know what it's about.
Yeah,
right.
Well, I mean, that's an okay place to be. I think that's one of the unique places where Star Wars is right now. We're in the hands of Disney. They have an opportunity to be reintroduced into anybody, honestly, who's interested in learning about the franchise by incorporating things like the Mandalorian series, or incorporating things like Star Wars Rebels, or bringing back Star Wars the Clone Wars series, or introducing Star Wars Resistance, that cartoon series, or doing things like having future series planned for the Disney Plus streaming platform that was known to have taken over a few billion subscribers from Netflix. That report went out.
Well, here's the thing, like, the game has kind of changed due to the MCU situation. You know, before MCU, you know, we just kind of expected the movies to kind of piggyback off each other and just kind of build a little bit from movie to movie. But now fans are expecting so much more. And even since, you know, Star Wars said that everything's kind of tied together, that the books, the comics, the TV series, they all kind of are in the same universe, video games. You know, and you can nitpick these films down to really, really down to fine details and pick stuff out that doesn't quite fit. But I just think, like you were saying, fans are just expecting a lot more due to the success, the gold standard of the MCU.
And I think you kind of hit it on the head. Because of everything the MCU has created, they have become the gold standard of long-standing franchises. Even in the short amount of time that the MCU has been out, which it's crazy to say, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has only been alive for 12 years.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, 12 years, that's it. And this film franchise has already changed the game for anything else to come that wants to become a world-building type of franchise. You have films that started in, obviously, in Paramount, that eventually made its way to Disney and being bought out created this massive success story of, well, this is how you create a world within the cinematic universe you are building. And this is how you create continuity. And it's interesting to show that the two biggest franchises right now that hold that record of keeping somewhat of that continuity consistent are both owned by Disney now. So you were going to say something, Travis?
No, I just think what we were talking about before we went on air is that they're just run very differently. And so we don't have to get too deep into that. But this movie, as we get further into it, it's kind of apparent that these three films in the sequel trilogy were not even talked about in the same kind of level that MCU films would be. Quite honestly, how this sequel trilogy should have been talked about. So,
Agree completely. I think that's a really true statement because of the fact that you look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe and everything that they've created, and the accountability, if you will, of creating the consistency, this consistent thread that runs through all of them of like, all right, just so we remember, this is what happened in the last one. It may not be tied to your personal hero's film in terms of like storyline. Like, this is not Thor 2 does not, you know, isn't in the same thread as like Captain America, the First Avenger. However, you have to keep this information consistent with this. And there was a little bit of that lack of accountability in this particular trilogy that I think we're going to kind of dig into once we start getting underway. But aside from those expectations, for me, that was really the biggest thing. I know a ton of people are already like jumping the bandwagon or already creating preconceived notions about like, well, if this film doesn't have this, I don't think I'm going to like it. Or if this film doesn't do this, I don't think I'm going to go for it. Or if this film fails to do these things because I heard or because someone said or because of that, I wanted to avoid that altogether. I just wanted to formulate, honestly, my own opinions based on what the attempt was and then go from there, you know? What about you, Spence? How did you feel? What were any of the other expectations that you had?
Other ones?
Yeah, did you have any other ones?
No.
Travis, what about you?
No, I think that was just pretty much it. Like, since I am kind of one of these next level Star Wars geeks, I read the books going in and understood what the comics were. I didn't get a chance to read all the comics, but I was ready to receive the story the way the you know Star Wars was presenting it. So
yeah. Well, digging right into the film, I just, before we start jumping into like all the stories and all the elements of whatever, first thing I want to know from you guys is your first impressions after the film was over. And I want to start with Spencer, because I want to get your opinion first on this one. I mean, because I heard half of it, so but I need to get it for recording purposes as well.
Okay, so initially, like when the movie ended, I was just really kind of not confused, but like there was a lot of things happening, especially things I either didn't understand. I feel like This movie came with like a pamphlet of things you should know before you see this,
and but you were missing the pamphlet.
Yeah. Like, it felt like things happened and I didn't quite understand why they happened.
Yeah.
Or I missed all the signaling somehow. Because there was a few things throughout this movie where I'm like, what is this? This came out of nowhere for me. And apparently I missed it and that's on me. But, like, still, it was a wild ride. And I don't know how much I liked it.
I have to agree with Spencer in terms of I saw The Last Jedi, and I've seen The Force Awakens several times, but I was so confused after The Rise of Skywalker in terms of just certain things that I just wasn't sure of that I had to go and rewatch The Last Jedi that night. And there were elements of the film that I'm like, well, what did that pay off? And what was this supposed to pay off? And why was this direction chosen? And why was that direction used? And why did we see this? And why didn't we see those things? And I think I left without feeling that solid level of resolution that I was hoping to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about you, Travis?
Yeah, I after the film was done, obviously I just had to sit there, and most of the time my wife and I will sit through the credits through most movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this one for sure had to just sit there and kind of soak it in, and I didn't talk much right afterwards, and just kind of didn't want to like look at my texts from family asking me how I liked the movie.
Yeah.
I just needed. And I didn't, like, for almost the whole day, didn't really respond too much to those type of questions because...
He was left in a catatonic state, it sounds
like. Well, no, so not quite as bad as you guys, because I did enjoy the movie. But I had a kind of a thought, like, maybe 3 or 4 days before going to see it, I was like, okay, I need to book a second viewing because I know that this first viewing, especially coming on the podcast, I just want to have a little more... I want to have a second viewing.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. And, you guys probably would have felt the same and say, wait, if we had a little more time, maybe we'll see it again.
No, we literally, that was one of the first things we said once we got it, like, I wish we had enough time to get a second showing in so that we could re-see this movie.
So I was able to see it the next day, and it helped a little bit to solidify some of my thoughts, but I enjoyed the movie maybe a little bit more the second time because I wasn't on the edge of my seat.
Yeah.
When you see a new Star Wars movie for the first time, at least for me, it's very tense. I'm not relaxed at all. I want to know, are they going to take care of that character? Are they going to treat this person with, respect? Are they going to, you want it to work.
Yeah,
And so I'm on edge the whole time, you know? And so the second viewing, I'm relaxed because I know it's coming. I know what to expect.
It's like being in class and watching the teacher like demonstrate your class project to the class. You're like, please don't let it fall apart. Please don't let it fall apart. And I think getting a second viewing probably would have cleared up a lot for both of us. I think I can speak for both of us, Spence, when I say that probably would have helped. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing for me, though, is like not having maybe as much knowledge to fill in gaps from 8 to 9 maybe would have helped a little bit, or maybe would have created some like some synaptic, you know, bridges for like, okay, that pays off because of this, and this is because of that, and there's a lot.
So here's the way I think about it. You have 7. Episode 8 takes place literally minutes, seconds after episode 7 happens. And so episode 7, episode 8 take place in this short time period. And then episode 9 comes by. I actually don't know what the time is. A year later.
It says a year.
Right. And so I think what the problem is, J.J. Abrams, since he directed 7, he directed 9. I think if he did have the opportunity to direct all 3, I think we would have had some character growth in the middle episode.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think he was trying just to take it to the next level in 9, but you didn't have that on-screen time.
Yeah.
So he was kind of shoving in. This movie just, it just packs so much into it.
Yeah.
And so you have to pay attention. And then I could see how people could get confused on things. I wasn't necessarily confused as in wanting answers of why that happened. So but I can understand. So yeah, I think the fact that they tried to put too much in there at the beginning, character development and all these type of things, they're just throwing so much at us so fast.
Yeah. Well, like I told Spence, I think one of the things that I felt with the beginning, I felt like it was moving really fast. It was going really fast to get nowhere. Like, in all honesty, like, kind of just getting into like the vibe of the movie. That first quarter seemed on the money. Like, I felt like the first quarter of the film was going in the right direction. It was moving, it was trucking along. That second quarter, however, kind of felt like it was that record that stuck on that loop, like it's kind of keeps going, because I felt like the redundancy of certain mission parts never seemed to really progress the mission that they were going on.
Basically, you mean like you're going from character to new character to new character, from planet to planet, to progress the plot along? Is that what you mean? Where you're kind of like, all right, we gotta go.
It's all still on the first part of that mission, like all of those, like you're going to this planet to look for this thing, and you end up here, and then this happens, and then you're having to go to this planet to get the information that was on the thing that you should have got the first time, and then something happens, and you're going to the spaceship to go get the thing that's on there that has the information about where you're supposed to be going, and then you go back down to the thing, back to the planet, to get the information from the droid that has the location of this, where to get the thing, and then you get to the place where it has the thing, and it totally.
So Spencer, was that where you were having the problems with, just tracking all of those things, or was it more bigger conceptual issues?
It was more. Okay, so.
Because I tracked all that.
Yeah,
that wasn't a problem for me with this film.
but in
most, like, of my things come from near the end.
Okay.
But like in the story element, like when you're writing a movie like that, you're giving, so you want to create successes and failures for your characters,
right?
And you want to be able to create an opportunity where you can celebrate and you can mourn and so forth. And I just felt like every single one of these situations was just another kick in the pants for our heroes. And it just seemed like that emotional point where you see Poe, where he's like, I don't know what's going to happen, whatever. Like, I literally felt like, yeah, that's how I'm feeling with this movie. I don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, interesting. And I did not feel that way at all. That's interesting.
It's like I'm trying to track. And mind you, everything that I just said, that's kind of beat for beat how the film takes it in that first 45 minutes to 45, 50 minutes. The thing is, I just wish there was a little bit more progression in it,
right,
to help create some consistency and fluidity for the story to push forward. Because I felt like from the 20-minute mark to the 45, 50-minute mark was the same 5, 10 minutes over and over and over. Mm. And it just, as much as I love seeing new parts of the galaxy and seeing new people and being introduced to all these things. Plus, we got a really great introduction to my new favorite Star Wars character, Babu Frick. Like, I love that. Like, I Babu Frick. Yeah. Like, that was just the best thing ever. I love that guy. I hope they just make a whole series just based on him.
Hmm. But I guess my point is that you felt like what they were, at least I felt like what they were doing wasn't in vain or wasn't. Here's an example. Last Jedi, the whole Canto Bite mission, it just
was
so that felt like you're not doing anything for the plot and the story.
Thankfully, right. It didn't feel like that.
In this movie, it felt like all those things that they were trying to go, you know, they're going to this planet so that they can get 3PO's memories. They're going to this place to try to, you know, find artifacts, you know, and so it didn't feel contrived in some ways.
It didn't, and that's one of the great comparisons. If we want to do comparison to another to the other films, I think. So here's where I stand. I'm not a huge fan of The Last Jedi.
Yes,
and I know a lot of people out there are not. And if anybody's heard that episode, I don't even want to give the number because I don't remember how hateful I was when I did that review. I was not kind to the film. However, in the interest of continuity and consistency, one would have to accept that unless you're doing Days of Future, you're Brian Singering it, this whole thing up and totally doing a Days of Future Past with the X-Men franchise and wiping everything clean, you have to take what a film does in a franchise at face value as, okay, this is now where we're at, we're moving forward.
Right.
And I looked at everything The Last Jedi did and I'm like, okay, all right, we're taking this. We're moving forward.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, JJ just kind of not rewrote, but
he retconned it.
A lot of ways he did, and I enjoyed most of those. But yeah, in a way, it's kind of like he made his Force Awakens. He, you know, didn't get to do or didn't choose to do Episode 8, and then when he was asked to come back to do Episode 9 to save the trilogy, he kind of said, "You know what? I'm just going to kind of bypass that film." He kept a couple of things like the Force Skyping, and he picked up on a couple of the things that, you know, that they established in Last Jedi, and he used those in this movie.
Yeah, like the mechanics of The Last Jedi, the little things he used. However,
he totally rewrote
certain parts. Now I mentioned The Last Jedi to say, sorry, because I was going on a little bit of a tangent, but in The Last Jedi, yeah, there are strong portions of that film that seriously feel like you're stuck in a hamster wheel going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, the entire middle of that film feels like you're going nowhere.
Yeah.
Because there's no point to go to Canto Bight. There's no point to do this little mission that's on the actual Imperial ship. There's no reason for Holdo to sacrifice herself on that ship to be, you know, to go light speed through something, which is ridiculous.
But that was really cool. I have to throw that out. That was one of the only positives of that movie.
That was one of the few. I do have to admit, it looked cool.
Yeah.
You know.
So you got kind of bogged down in the mechanics of the storytelling.
Because here's the thing, and I was thinking about that. I literally was having this conversation with myself on the way to the theater. I'm like, I have to be. I can't be biased about this film, but I have to be honest and look at it from three different perspectives. Three different perspectives for this film. Number one, I have a responsibility to look at it cinematically. I have a responsibility to look at it in a way that translates to the cinematic experience of what it would feel like if somebody else was wanting to see this film for its merits, for the things that make it quality. Whether if it's any film, whether if I'm watching The Godfather or if I'm watching Big Daddy, it doesn't matter. You have to look at it cinematically and say, okay, where are the parts? Where are the pieces? How do they fit? Does this make a whole puzzle? Are there pieces missing? I have to look at it from that perspective. Secondly, I have to look at a film through the lens of a Star Wars fan. I love Star Wars. I love the franchise. Empire Strikes Back is one of my favorite films. Revenge of the Jedi is a close second. I love Duel of the Fates. I love that song so much. I had it as my ringtone for the longest time. And so this whole thing has been in my blood for years. But from a third perspective, I also have to look as from a person of color, from a person who is a minority, from somebody who really fights and pushes for equality and proper representation in films. I have to look at it through those lenses. Mm-hmm. And so this was a hard film to kind of look at all this and say, all right, yes, there's an opportunity to have fun here. There's an opportunity to see story elements. There's an opportunity to see the pieces. However, through lens one, how does it work? Through lens two, how does it work? Through lens three. And I think going back to lens one, the cinematic perspective, I think having a little bit of that skippy part of like story stall, story stall, story stall, without feeling like you're getting anywhere for so long, for somebody who may not be interested in Star Wars, mm-hmm. like somebody who's never really watched a Star Wars film, and you take them to this film, that can be something that's like, dude, we're not getting anywhere. Why are we watching this 2-hour movie and we're not getting anywhere for 30 minutes? It could be a turnoff. I don't know. Personally, I think that could be a turnoff for somebody who I want to introduce Star Wars to. I mean, what do you think, Travis?
No, I don't know. I guess I did not feel that. And maybe it's because I'm so deep into the Star Wars lore. Obviously, I'm also a movie fan. And so I know when a movie isn't working for me, you know, in that way, too. But I did not feel that bogged down. This is getting slow, or this is get, or why are we doing this from scene to scene?
Okay.
I did not feel that first viewing or the second viewing.
Interesting.
Let me be honest. During this whole like journey of let's decode a dagger, like at a certain point, I just got frustrated. It's like, why was he given the language to be able to read it, but then have no ability to tell anybody what it says?
Yeah, so
like, that's so bizarre.
You know what? Honestly, there is some of those plot points, the dagger in particular. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you have to stay? Like, first of all, the dagger looks really, really old, but it couldn't have been more than 30 years, 40 years old, because that's when the Death Star. But nonetheless, I mean, that's, you know, fine. There is little things like that you can really nitpick this film down to, as far as getting from point A to point B and keep moving on. But I have some bigger issues with this film, and so those little smaller things didn't really. I could like, kind of like let them pass.
Okay,
because so, that was my problem.
He's got bigger fish to fry. Is what he's saying.
I did. When that was my so, I understand how you guys can get like feel this way about the film, but
I was
more on the larger like
now this is
galaxy level type stuff. That was just like,
and this is where I want to get to next, because mind you, that particular scene, that was just an example of like just really that part. Like the rest of the film's good. It's that part that really does that to me. It kind of feels like a stalled out car, but. In terms of the larger elements of the film, there are a few that I really kind of want to delve into, as I believe, just as we just heard, Travis does too. And I think one of the first things, real quick, that I want to delve into is the reveal of Rey's parentage. I didn't like that, to be quite frank. Now, this might be a little controversial at this table, or whoever's listening, but to be honest, I actually kind of liked Rian Johnson's version of she doesn't belong to anybody. She's a nobody, and out of nobody can come out greatness.
Yeah, we talked about it on the last podcast I was on, the broom boy, you know. And everyone has the potential, and I even said it. I wanted her. My bet was that she'd be a nobody, but as we found out, JJ kind of played it safe with this film and going.
That's an understatement.
Yes, and he went safe with Force Awakens as well.
Yeah,
so there's nothing. There's nothing shocking about that.
No,
but having her a Palpatine does explain a lot of things and does help the overall story as far as...
It makes things convenient.
Well,
like, to be quite frank. Like,
but if he did have this plan from the beginning, then like, why is she so powerful without any training?
Which is one of the biggest criticisms
of Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm. Which, that would be something like... Obviously, we can't go back in time and be like, JJ, I need to know for the future. What are you planning to do long term? Like, I would love to find out if that was the case. Because if that was the case, then maybe this would actually work. But I feel like it makes for such a convenient plot point that's like, all right.
There's a lot of that in this movie.
which, mind you, going to Rian Johnson, like, he made her just as OP as I think JJ was working towards. And it just felt like you go from like this situation where three different people are, two different people are taking this, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, she's just, you know, one with the Force. There's no one else that's Force sensitive that's quite like her. She's unique. She's this and that, and she's gonna work on her powers, and she's like super OP. And oh well, it's because she's right. Palpatine's granddaughter, mm-hmm. and it's right. like.
So after my second viewing, I didn't know how I felt about it, but after second viewing, I'm like, you know what, I'm okay with it. Like
you are,
yeah. I started making notes and stuff. So when people ask me about it,
uh-huh.
I had like a good things I liked about it, bad things I liked about the movie, and then kind of indifferent. And that was kind of in the middle.
That's
like,
the indifferent
yeah,
one?
Yeah, that's one of the indifferent ones. It's just kind of like, you know what? It's fine. It helps the story along, and I guess I'm okay with it, you know?
Yeah, I just, for me, like I said, it feels convenient. It feels like,
right.
like, If I wanted to create a franchise, like, okay, take for instance, one of Spencer's favorite trilogies, Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
What if 1 and 2 were done by Roberts, or 1 was done by Robert Zemeckis, 2nd was done by John Hughes, and then the last one was done by Robert Zemeckis, and in the 3rd Robert Zemeckis film, you come to find out, oh, Marty's had the ability to time travel all on his own. It's actually in him. It's right. not the vehicle. And it's just like all of a sudden that changes the whole element right. of the film, because then it takes out key pieces and key parts that were so vital to 1 and 2, or at least a big part of what was building towards what 1 and 2 were going to. And it's like, for me, this just seems a little.
Yeah, this is one of the biggest ones to say Last Jedi. Nope. You know,
yeah.
This is probably the biggest one besides some of the Luke stuff. But yeah.
Oh, besides all of the Luke stuff.
which I love.
But I feel like for me that was for one of the biggest reveals in this Star Wars trilogy. I don't know if this hit me the way it was intended to hit me. You know, like, oh my gosh,
because it's kind of expected.
Yeah, right,
exactly.
Yeah. If the way the film is going, like the way the film went from that beginning part through the first half before they get to the reveal, you're like. Well, that looks familiar.
But here's the thing. That looks familiar. And so this is a tricky one, because we want our Star Wars to be safe, mm-hmm. but we don't, because I'm speaking for me, right?
Yeah.
I like The Force Awakens because it was safe. It was fun. Didn't take too many risks. But then when they gave Rian Johnson free rein almost to take those risks, I don't like it.
Yeah.
And so, because I don't think Luke would do that, and yeah. I don't think, you know, and so it's a tough situation where, in, you know, as this is Star Wars fandom in general,
yeah,
we want there to be like new things and risk, but then at the same time we don't like it, you know. We like our safe Star Wars in a lot of ways. We love The Mandalorian.
Yeah,
The Mandalorian is so safe. It's just like a toy box, you know. It's like one of the safest things out there. You know, we won't get into Mandalorian spoilers here.
Yeah.
But but it is more or less kind of a safe show.
I mean, technically, we are talking about spoilers.
Oh, okay, so. You're right. Yeah, I guess. But anyway, yeah, you're right, because there's something coming up where it is a spoiler that we can talk about that relates to Mandalorian.
Yep.
But and so it's a little tricky. We want a safe Star Wars. But we kind of don't, but we do, and so it's hard.
And I think, go ahead, Spencer.
Well, you know, it's about finding balance, like in the Force.
Right.
like, because they've done things, like, in each one of these, like, movies of the sequels, where, like, there's something new in it that's really cool. Like, in Episode 7, Kylo Ren stops, like, a blaster in midair with Force.
Right.
That's cool.
Right, we haven't seen that before.
Yeah.
Right.
In, like, the Last Jedi, Kylo and Rey just fighting in it was amazing.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I feel like there's a balance here of, like, doing new things that we haven't seen before and, like, staying, like, in character with, like, the universe you're setting up. And I feel like they should be able to do this.
Well, and I think here's the overarching... And this is just my opinion, but this is the overarching mindset. We don't mind people playing in our sandbox. We just have issues with people playing with our toys in the sandbox, other than the people we trust. And let's just be honest. I mean, quite frankly, this franchise needs a George.
Yes, I agree with you.
I mean, it goes back to what we were saying at the beginning of this episode. There is an issue of accountability in terms of the overarching continuity. And without having that one person or having that Kevin Feige or having that George Lucas to create that continuity consistency of saying, hey, no, you know what? This isn't part of this continuity because this and this is happening and that's happening. Ah, okay. Well, okay. Well, we can do this. Okay, cool. Well, what about this and that? Well, we can do this, but we can't do that because remember this one, that particular episode had this, and so that makes that totally not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay. And I think as much as we put blame on George, I think the fact of the matter is, I think we need somebody to come in and say, you know what? It's on me. Let's just do it this way, and I'll carry that. And we really haven't had anybody do that for the whole trilogy. We've had people do that. Obviously, directors, that's their whole job. But to see a whole franchise, a whole trilogy, a whole saga portion of it, to see it through with some fluidity in it, we haven't had that in the Star Wars.
Yeah, world. I really think that's going to change in the future. Now that this trilogy is done and... They don't have any movies in official production right now. They just announced one movie that doesn't have a release date. I think they're going to have to kind of reset this. And I'm actually okay with not having a movie for maybe even 5 years.
Yeah.
Like we need a good reset here. And then because we have some great TV shows going. And so that can tide us over. And then they can kind of reset the cinematic franchise and go from there.
Yeah. But I think, honestly, that's probably just going to be the biggest thing right now. Once they get their full reset done and then they come back and say, so you remember the Star Wars franchise when we were doing stuff? Well, we're back to doing movies. And as long as they don't do that Aunt Beru movie, I'm okay. So that's all I'm saying. But you said you had a bigger gripe. Travis,
right. Well, so mine is related to Palpatine. I just had a problem with how they introduced him. Let me just take a little sidestep here. Like, I know we've been harping on the kind of the negatives of this film, and I think this is a fun movie. I really like this movie. I don't love it the way I do some of the others. It's a fun movie, and I think most people going to see this movie are really, really going to enjoy it, especially if you've seen the other ones. We are kind of on the edge of kind of the ultra nerdy type stuff. And so stuff like this I'm about to say bothers me, but I think other people going to see this film is just going to be like, okay, there's another big bad guy. So I have a problem with Palpatine just coming back the way he did. Because the opening crawl, like the first words are...
He's
the,
back.
The dead speak.
Yeah. Right. And so, dead speak. Right. Dead speak. And then goes on to say that Palpatine's back. He's, you know, in the unknown regions. He's amassed this army. And I don't need like maybe a step-by-step explanation of how he's come back, because the last we saw him, he was thrown down a reactor shaft and blew up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he's back and he seems just as strong as he was before, maybe. And we don't have an explanation why he comes back, and that's not fair. I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at. And again,
true.
That's like you were saying earlier. It's kind of easy storytelling, and it's just kind of like, well, we need a bad guy.
Yeah.
And
let's do the biggest fan service we can do. And
so Rian Johnson killed off Snoke, and so we gotta do something.
Yeah.
And so I mean, what is Palpatine gonna come back in 10 years again? Like. I know he blew up in this movie, but...
Yeah, like, this movie kind of leaves that open as that could potentially happen, yes.
It's true.
I really don't feel it cheapened Return of the Jedi and the sacrifices there, because it wasn't really about the Emperor. It was more about Anakin and Luke movie.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And so I don't feel like, you know... But still, that's a big problem for me with this movie. And honestly, it's kind of the overarching thing that's like... Come on now. How is this even possible? How do you have all these ships out there? We just need something. You just can't say, bam, they're there, you know?
Yeah, and I agree completely to that, because it's one of those elements where it's just the convenience of it being there.
Yeah.
There's no someone, so JJ took the whole idea of everything that happened in the original trilogy, put a like a parenthesis question mark next to it as terms of the things that we believed were definitive at the end of that film, and then used one of the biggest things there, which was Palpatine dies, parenthesis question mark, and was like, all right, I'm going to take this and I'm going to put it in this film and be like, what's the most, what's the biggest way to give fan service to fans right. of Star Wars in general who just watch the films, don't watch the series, don't watch, don't read the comics, don't read the books, aren't invested in any other way other than they show up, come, you know, opening night, watch the films and talk about it. You know,
right.
What's the biggest way we can try to create the biggest, you know, uproar and applause as to what we're going to do? And they took that and I do agree with Travis. I don't think it cheapens anything that happens at the end of Revenge of the
Return of the Jedi.
It doesn't cheapen any of that because that wasn't the focus. The Emperor was just something in the way of what was the bigger story.
So that being said, I do really, really like the Rey and Kylo and Emperor scenes. Like,
yeah,
like it all works for me. So just if I get over the fact that I don't like that he's back in the way he's back, the rest of that kind of storyline works out for me. And so I think the acting is so good.
I agree.
I think the action is really good. I mean, there's
the
some
air fights.
There's some prizes, you know, like he's electrifying the whole atmosphere. Like, you know, yeah, it's cool. New stuff.
Yeah.
And it works for me. I like, you know, how that last battle with when Ben comes back, you know, he's not Kylo anymore. He's Ben, actually. He comes back and he has, you know, he's fighting with Rey and how they pass off the lightsaber. It just all works for me. But the other stuff around there, the Sith and the whatever those things are in the audience.
Yeah, I was who are these people?
Like, it doesn't make sense.
They're on Geonosha.
And then the fleet he has, like, okay,
who's
maybe
been building that stuff?
That's fine, but then who are all these people? And then
Have they been in the ship this entire time?
Right, and then this goes to another problem I have with this movie is, and this is a something that Star Wars does over and over again, which I don't like, is
mm-hmm.
ultimate planet killer super weapons. You know, Death Star 2, Star Killer Base. And now there's a planet killer on every ship, and there's over 1,000 of them out there or whatever.
Yeah, it's on just, every Star Cruiser.
Right.
Every single one of them had it.
I was hoping when they fired on the planet that it wasn't going to be a planet killer. It's just going to be do something bad. But, you know, and it's just like, again, it's the same thing. And I'm just like, ugh, I just rolled my eyes at that.
Which, mind you, by the way, real quick, I do have to give props. This film did do extra effort on making the opportunities to honor the films of old by doing little things like how they rotoscoped in Carrie Fisher rather than just digitally
right.
remapping her in the scene. I appreciated that as well when they did demonstrate the raw power of this facility and they blew up one of the planets. They actually did it old school style. Like they actually had something that it looked really cool.
Right.
So I have to give it props. I have to give that props. But the whole idea, like not everything has to be on a scale where it's like, okay, all life's going to end in a few hours unless this hero, which obviously now they're going to have to win because this was a galaxy far, far away,
right.
long time ago. This has to come out on the plus side. There's no like wavering chance of like, oh my gosh, she's not going to do it. This isn't going to happen. Obviously, they make this true. Who's telling the story? You know? But I have to agree with Travis. And along the lines of what you were talking about, one of the things that I just wasn't a fan of, and I think this kind of came out of thin air, because I felt like it was leaning more towards a friendship, but it really evolved into something else. After the whole sequence with Rey and Rey and Ben, after they defeat the Emperor, because obviously, duh, that was going to happen. After they defeat the Emperor, and they have this moment where they have to use powers or whatever to do stuff. We'll talk about that in a second. they're looking at each other. They have this affectionate look, and then they kiss.
Yeah,
she kisses him.
She kisses him.
You didn't like that, Spencer?
No, because that came out of nowhere.
Really?
Like, Thirsty Ray over here? Like, I for me, it just felt like this, if they would have hugged, or even in the element, because it just felt like they were more connected as a bond of, like, almost brother and sister, or just really close friends.
Yeah.
I felt like that's what the direction was going, especially with the last one, when they were doing as Travis so eloquently placed it. What'd you call it? Foreskyping?
Oh, that's, yeah.
I like that.
That's a great terminology for that.
As they were foreskyping, it didn't feel like that was like the right payoff. I was like, why are you guys kissing? I don't get it. Like,
he still killed his dad. Like, that's kind of a, she was right there for that. That's kind of a hard thing to just get over. Like, I
which was only a year later. Like, it wasn't even like 2-5 years later. It was a year later. So I don't know. That just seemed like a really interesting place to kind of put that part of the film. But then it gets better, because after that, then he lays down and then he disappears.
Yeah. So this was the other thing that I was kind of indifferent about. Was
go for it.
Was Kylo's redemption.
Is that what that's called?
Yeah, like being redeemed. Yeah,
I mean.
Oh, you mean as far as
just like the overall. Like,
I really felt that he did he really showed. Like, I think the obviously the pivotal scene was his memories.
That was cool.
Of Han Solo back on the Death Star. Mm-hmm. Like, that really worked for me, and I think you had to have some catalyst, some scene, some reason why. And we kind of thought it was going to be Rey's in peril, and he has to choose. You know, kind of the way Darth and Luke, right? But it was just a little different. You know, it was the fact that Leia basically gave up her life to kind of communicate with him in a way, like maybe she had to use all her force power she had left in her to communicate to her son. That got through to him, and that opened the door for him to have or be open to have this memory, thus throwing away his lightsaber. You know, and as soon as he threw it,
mind you, that whole scene, that was a pretty touching scene.
Right.
Like, I have to admit, recreating the bridge scene from Episode 7, The Force Awakens, where Han Solo goes out there and talks to him, and he's like, I know what I have to do, but I don't think I can do it alone. Right. And recreating it into him throwing away his old lightsaber, that was actually pretty cool. I have to give props to that scene. Now, whatever caused him to lock lips with Rey, that's a whole different ball game. I don't know.
It didn't bother me as much as I thought it was going to.
I just feel like, okay, that was very opposite of what I would see in a Star Wars film. However, very much in line with a Disney film. And I felt like this was like a Disney kind of push. Like, we should have them just come together and be Jedi prince and princess. Like, and then JJ is like, I'll see what I can do. And then he does that. And then the executives were like, oh, right. And then Ben falls on the floor and disappears. And they're like, oh, no. And he's gone. And mind you, if that's part of that redemptive arc, I could see it. I just felt like,
you're right. The riskier thing would have been if they had him live. Rey dies. And then now he has to live with that. He's good. I mean, or he's, you know, but he has to live with that. But that doesn't give us the ending that this trilogy and maybe the saga deserves, honestly. Like,
no,
that, I think that's good. I think that's maybe good for this short kind of story. But to end the whole saga that way would be tough.
Well, yeah. And this is my gripe that I had when we were talking about it last time is projections for this film. I was hoping, not hoping, but I was just anticipating that anybody who was force sensitive and of power at this time would be gone. Like, because now that there's still one, there's no balance.
Well, they're showing that there's a lot more that people are force sensitive.
Yeah.
I mean, Finn has force sensitivity. Maz Kanata has a little bit. I mean, different levels of force sensitivity. Not everyone can be a Jedi.
Yeah.
But there's still, even implied I forget her name, the other character that they meet on the planet where they have a whole squadron of ex-stormtroopers. they're kind of implying a little bit that some of them have force sensitivities.
Mm. Oh, yeah. You're right.
So, which I like that character, and I thought it worked. But, I mean, they're trying to imply that there's more people out there that have it. It's just a matter of what degree.
And I think what I was hoping for is just to remove any Jedi / Sith
right.
presence altogether, because in all honesty, the only way they can reset this franchise or at least give it new grounds to go in a different direction is to remove everything from the old worlds.
Right.
You know, which I have to agree, you know, Kylo was on the money. He's like, let the old ways burn, you know, which that's a line from, you know, The Last Jedi. But
so, yeah, I mean, you're right. If we're going to the end kind of talking about, you know, that there, I mean, I thought it was a beautiful ending.
Yeah.
But for this film, and maybe for this, but it you don't feel, and I think Spencer would probably really agree with this, you don't feel like this trilogy went anywhere. You True. Know, like Rey learned a little bit, but it wasn't, I can't give you a definite, like I can with the original trilogy or even the prequels.
Yeah.
I can't give you, okay, we started here, we ended here, this is what we learned. I can't really articulate that.
Yeah.
So that's a problem again with this, the direction the movies are going.
Yeah, I feel like for the main characters, for the most part, if you compare like character growth from across them, yeah, I think you're right. Like they're mostly kind of the same. They grew a little bit, yeah. but not tons.
I mean, Finn didn't really change too much. A little bit, but he's still yelling at people, like trying to go save them when he would just die. If he went up against like Kylo, he would just toast, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
And so, and Poe maybe grows a little bit. Poe grows a lot more in the books that are in between if you read those,
yeah,
but not really much on screen. And so,
and within a year's time from the first film where we first see him after being abducted, you see him become the general now,
right?
Or not, yeah, the general, yeah. And it's like, all right, well, that's a progression of like status, but. Growth-wise,
right?
Yeah. It seemed like there was still,
well, again, that I think that echoes Return of the Jedi, where Han Solo becomes a general after being with the Rebellion for just a couple of years.
But he becomes a general in Empire.
No, in Return of the Jedi. So
was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was Return of the Jedi because he was looking to leave. It's still in Empire.
Oh, that's right. Because of the argument between him and Leia. Yeah. That's right.
So you know, him and Lando become generals. So that always kind of bothered me back in the day. Like, oh, you're instantly generals. You know, but whatever. It's just for
guilty by association.
It's just for storytelling purposes. Just kind of get it going. But, yeah. But yeah. So I think overall, like, we still have those issues where, obviously the Kylo Ben story was kind of developed a lot.
Yeah.
And Rey's still my favorite character of the new people in this trilogy, mm-hmm. but she grew a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, I think if I'm taking into consideration from episode 7 through now episode 9, I think if I'm being honest with myself, my favorite character has to be Kylo Ren.
Like, right. That's very common.
You yeah. know, I have to admit, like, his progression as a character going from the baby, you know, throwing tantrums, using his lightsaber to cut everything up inside a control room or whatever, and having outbursts like that,
yeah.
to becoming, having a redemptive arc and coming to knowing himself and realizing what he was able to become all along and aid in the fall of the Sith to bring balance to the Force, it makes complete sense that, like, hey, that guy is a standout character. And I as odd as that sounds, you know, Kylo Swole, like it was a great story and a great one of the better consistent arcs from 7 to 8 to 9.
And obviously, Adam Driver's acting really helped that
yeah.
progress. You know, yeah. like if you had a different actor in there, it might and same with Daisy Ridley, it just might not have translated the same way.
Yeah, I think. Kind of, overall, I think one of the biggest things I do have to lament is the minimization of, like, characters that were brought in like, episode 8, like Rose Tycho. Like, Rose was robbed completely.
Yeah.
Like, she should have had, she was a major player in episode 8. She was somebody who essentially saves Finn from doing something dumb, and now in this film, she's relegated to like a button pusher.
Again, there's just they pack so much into this movie. Mm-hmm. They just could not give these characters time of day.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, even the new characters, the Carrie Russell character, which I liked a lot. I forget
her
name.
Super underutilized Carrie Russell.
Right, again, they just can't use her too much because
Daft Punk.
Yeah,
in space.
I know, it's awesome. But I thought her character really, really worked with Poe. It was really, really great. But
I think the dynamic was great.
Yeah,
I just wish it was introduced in Episode 8.
Again, right? If we had a whole other movie that was like maybe Episode 8 was like 6 months later, a year later, and then this one's another year, like kind of like the original trilogy, you know?
But, yeah, exactly.
I
feel like this was an opportunity that they missed out on with a lot of different characters and a lot of different opportunities where giving more breath and a little bit more opportunity for those side characters, like going back to Rose. Rose was interesting as all get out in Episode 8. She's literally the catalyst for that whole beginning of the film, and her arc is it starts within the first 5 minutes of the film. And then you see her in this, and there's very little mention or even screen time. She gets about as much screen time as what's his name, the elf,
Lord of the Rings,
from Lord of the Rings,
Dominic Monaghan.
There you go.
That's funny.
Like they both have the same amount of screen time.
Yeah.
But I have this is in all honesty, this was a really big gripe for me, and this is just a personal one.
Okay.
This is a very, very personal one. I am very upset that we see the ghost in every trailer and in the battle and not a single shot of General Syndulla or Zeb oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. Anybody.
So you listeners who don't know what Eddie is ranting about right now, he's talking about the Star Wars Rebels TV show that
was
four seasons on Disney XD. Which was a great show.
Like if
and their ship is make a cameo in the movie.
It makes several cameos.
It does.
Like all over the place. It's even in Rogue One.
Yes.
The ship is in Rogue One, for God's sakes. You know, and there's no Sabine, there's no General Syndulla, there's no even freaking Chopper, man.
Right. So I listened to like one or two maybe more than that in the last couple of days, and a lot of people think that JJ kind of made this movie in a vacuum. And he didn't get much like input from the Lucasfilm story group. He didn't bounce things off people too much. And so some of those connecting points are not really there. And I think partway is because he's doing his own. Yes, he's doing his own thing. Maybe he had this idea from the beginning. And then also, again, there was just so much in this movie. And so to add more stuff, I think it might have been hard for him. But yes. I agree with you.
I'm just like.
Yeah. They lost opportunity, right?
Extremely lost because here's the thing. We get, which is great. This is a great scene. This is a wonderful scene. We get a chance to see Wedge after 30 plus years.
For two seconds,
commanding a ship of his own and piloting it a part of the battle sequence. And that's cool. But then like 2-3 seconds later, we see the ghost go this way to the right. And then about 20 seconds later, we see the ghost go that way to the right. And everybody else, you see the pilots. You see Snip get blown out of the air.
Snip.
You see, you
snap,
know.
All, snap.
Snap, snip. Snap gets snipped. And then you see, like, the ghost. And then after the battle, everybody's hugging and kissing.
That's funny.
And we get all this stuff. And we get our first Star Wars same gender species kiss with, you know, at the end, which was cool. And then we get everybody there, and I'm like, where's Chopper?
Right.
Where's General Syndulla? Where's Sabine?
Yeah.
I wanted to see somebody, and I'm like, even more so, and I don't know if you finished the series of Rebels,
I
Travis?
Have. Yes, I have.
I was really, really, really hoping that an opportunity of, like, Ezra would pop up out of nowhere.
Right.
Which, I do have to admit, they do pay off a little bit of that, where there's a sequence where while Rey is gathering the strength to fight against the Emperor while she's been knocked down, she calls on the rest of the Jedi Masters who had of the past to come to her and to give her strength. And we get this really great audio montage of, as she's like, her mind's wandering through space, of all the Jedi from past films.
About 10 or 11 of them.
Yeah, because we get everything from Mace Windu to Kanan Jarrus to Obi-Wan to Yoda to Luke to Hayden Christensen to Obi-Wan. To, we get so many. We get Qui-Gon. Yep, we get Qui-Gon. I'm like, get some Irish in there.
All right, so I have a can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I have just kind of one more gripe with the film, and this is a smaller one, so I wanted to get your guys' interpretation of this one.
Yeah.
The music. So
you had mentioned this. Go ahead.
So it was stated early on, I think it was John Williams' son tweeted or said something, that John Williams is going to reach upon every Star Wars film and incorporate this music into the new movie to kind of like, you know, encapsulate these movies. And so he's going to use elements from each of them. And this hit me on the first viewing. This hit me on the second viewing. Oh, first of all, what did you guys think about the music, first of all?
It seemed to kind of be a conglomeration of a lot of the different songs
from like
the
previous
films. Yep. It seemed like almost like a sampler, like if somebody was doing a DJ mix of a lot of the songs and put them in like light, cadences and like, you know, beats.
Right.
And then kind of said, all right, this is what we're going to do to honor this, and this is what we're going to do to honor that.
So it took me out of the film so much.
Really?
Because I felt it was just too on the nose. And because it would be like, here's an example. Let me think. Well, any type of, you know, dark side thing, you get the Vader's theme almost every single time.
Dark side.
And even like, even for like 2 seconds or 4 seconds, you know, and I'm like, the one that just like rolled my eyes the most is after Leia passes away. They go back to her, and we already know she's dead.
Yeah.
But it was a second. It was a shot for like 3 or 4 seconds, maybe 5, whatever. It shows Moss and her, and it plays the Leia theme for like a short second, then it goes away. And I'm just like, and it was, and then when they go to Endor, they're playing the Endor music. When they go to the throne room in Return of the Jedi from the second Death Star, they're playing that music. And
it's like, it's just a touch of it.
Yeah.
But it's just flavored into the original.
I know some fans are just going to love this more than anything. Mm. But for me, it just kept taking me out because it was really hot in the mix, first of all.
Oh, wow.
And then it was just because they were so short. It wasn't like they wove these themes in like they've done in other TV shows or even other movies, where even in like Force Awakens, John Williams just majestically weaved in these original themes.
Yeah.
I obviously love John Williams, and I think Ray's theme is one of my favorites out of all 9 movies, you know?
Yeah.
But, and then the music at the very end, I really love that music, but it just took me out both times. And I just wish it wasn't so on point to be like, okay, we have to play the Imperial Death March here again, or we have to play Luke's theme again, or the Dagobah theme, because the X-Wing's coming out of the water. So what do we have to do? We have to play the Dagobah music.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would have been okay with it if they just backed off a bit.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
But that didn't bother you guys, huh?
You know, honestly, the mix was fine in our theater, thankfully.
It wasn't the bad mix in the theater. I just mean it's just so in your face. It's like, no, this is the music. This is the music. It's here.
You know, it wasn't until you mentioned this that like I noticed each time they like wandered into one of those, because like I remember thinking like when they were playing the Imperial March, I was like, I associate this so strongly with Darth Vader than I do with just general with Emperor Palpatine.
That's kind of my point, is that it took me out, and it made me think of Dagobah when it's coming out, but I don't need it to be so in my face.
Yeah, and I think that takes a little bit. So that right there, I believe, is more of the emphasis in like, all right, a lot of our fans don't know, so we're just going to really turn up the amps
on
like,
the fan service. Yeah,
that fan service and be like, all right, so we're not only going to show them parts of places they remember, but we're going to also give them audio clues of like, if you don't know what happened here, this is what happened.
And that can invoke those feelings and those memories of the originals. Yeah, it makes sense.
And I think that's just one of those things where for us as fans who are aware, it's like, you know what? I could do without. I could do with maybe something original to that or something in honor of. But if you're just going to play this piece that has something just dropped in there for a little bit and then you exit out of it just for the remainder of the song, then it's kind of lost on me.
So that's why I'm really curious to get the soundtrack, and I'm a kind of a soundtrack guy in general, but I'm curious to go get the soundtrack and be like, okay, is all these little bits in the soundtrack with other things, or was it more of music editing where, yeah, there's his whole score that he made for this film.
Yeah.
But then they inserted all of these old themes in here for storytelling purposes.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to see what the soundtrack is like. I haven't listened to it because I didn't want to be spoiled on anything.
That's going to be interesting to see.
But yeah, that's one of my homework assignments this week.
Wrapping this whole thing up, because I know we've gone on this for a long time, and we could probably go longer.
No, I think we're done.
I want to reiterate one simple fact, in that we here on the Filmlosophers, as well as Travis is very much a Filmlosopher as much as we are here, we love this franchise, and we don't talk about it like this in the mindset of like, all right, this is just garbage. We're not like everyday trolls. That's not what we do here. Mm-hmm. We look at films and we critique them based on the level of quality we've been given already. And we love these films. We love them till the day we die, to be quite honest, because they're a part of who we are. They're a part of our life. They're a part of our future. They're a part of our present, our past. So when we talk about it, whatever grade we give it, just know we still had a good time with it. And this is something we'll probably revisit and rewatch later down the road. Travis has already seen it twice. I plan to see it sometime next week. Take my nephew and niece. So no matter what, if you're a fan, don't let other people sway you from being the fan that you are of the franchise that you love and endure for. So just so you know that, let's jump into our passing and failing and monocles. Let's start with Spencer. Spencer, does it pass or fail? And how many monocles?
Yeah, this movie passes. It's definitely a step up from The Last Jedi. But I'm going to say something kind of controversial and say that there's probably, like, the peaks of The Last Jedi, I feel, kind of are a bit more memorable to me than the peaks of this movie.
Okay. All right. That's a strong opinion there, buddy. We might have to do an extra credit on that sometime next week.
Yeah, we'll think.
Yeah, maybe have to do a rewatch, you know?
Yeah.
Just come back to it and revisit it for, like, 15 minutes.
Exactly. So what's the grade look like?
I'm going to give this like 2.5.
Okay.
Because it was all right.
All right.
That's kind of where I end up.
What about you, Travis? Does it pass or fail, and how many monocles?
It passes out of five. Okay. It passes for sure. It's a good Star Wars movie. I love it. I mean, I like it. I don't really love it. And I'll probably give it 3 out of 5.
Okay. All right. As for me, the film passes. It's definitely a Star Wars film. We get a sense of that Star Wars awe and wonder in the universe that we get to explore, and it's very much appreciated. Plus, this film does close out the saga chapter that we've been enduring for the last 42 years. Not just enduring, but enjoying and oh, relishing. And there have been parts where we've had to endure,
you know,
and there are parts that we've celebrated. And so it passes for me. And in terms of monocles, I'm also going to give it a 3. I'm going to give it a 3 because this is the solid effort of what it looks like when you take away an accountability aspect and still try to do your best. And I can see the attempt. There are parts that just was confusing. But on all accounts, I'll give it a 3 because, quite honestly, this was still much better than The Last Jedi. However, there's still much to be expected in the future for what we have coming out, not only on Disney Plus, but however long they take before they decide to do the reset on the future franchise and what's to come. So that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check out all of our episodes online at filmlosophers.com. As well, you can check them out at any of those streaming places where you are, whether if it's Pandora, Audio Boom, Stitcher, iTunes, Player FM, Google Play, everywhere. Also, check out our Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Filmlosophers. Facebook.com/Filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at Filmlosophy101.
Which we definitely have posts on our Instagram.
We do. Thank you very much. Finally, someone admits it. Of course, we want to thank Travis for being a part of this show again
and
letting us pick his brain and get some thoughts on what this film is about. And honestly, to kind of project and see what we're looking at in terms of the near future. So,
thank you, my Jedi Knight friends. Yeah. May the Force be with you.
And also with you. as we come to a close on this joyous and holiday episode, we also want to wish you from the Filmlosophers a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays. And we hope you guys are safe and have wonderful times, not only with family, but the people you choose to have family with, and just have fun. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Travis.
Class dismissed.